Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, Chase McKay, Michelle Konezvic, Nick Frazier in for the reporter today. Well, I'm sure over the course of the next few days, we'll come up with a nickname for him. It just kind of happens naturally, you know, on this show. And now Nick has run with it. Nick Keyser has run with it as the reporter. And so, you know, maybe Frazier, who knows? Who knows what your nickname will be?
But we'll get there, Chase. I don't know. We'll get there.
I have faith in us that that will happen. But the tournament is set, the field of 68, which even after – it's been, what, 10 years, I think, since they've added the play-in games, as I still call them. It's still weird to say 68, but
– I agree.
Got a couple of matchups in that are intriguing. I mean, Mississippi State-Pitt should be fun. That's tomorrow night on True TV. This is also the time of year where you have to find True TV. Because unless you're an Impractical Jokers fan, you never watch True TV, which I highly recommend Impractical Jokers. But I like Mississippi State Pitt. I think Arizona State Nevada. Nevada should be good. And then you got the 16s that'll match up in the first four games over the course of Tuesday and Wednesday to set the field of 64. But I'm curious of something. And I'm not, you know, I spent a lot of time ranting on Vanderbilt not getting in. And, you know, I still think they deserve to be in over a team like Mississippi State. But how much did the committee, when it comes to seeding, leaving a team in or out, how much did they factor in injuries into their decision? This was the selection committee talking about that.
The injuries on these teams, Marcus Sasser at Houston, you've got a coach, Bill Self. You don't know if he's going to play as you're going through, if he's going to be able to coach as you're going through the process. Jalen Clark at UCLA. How much does that affect seeding as you're talking about this?
A great deal. And when you think about, as you mentioned, you have Texas, Tennessee, Virginia, UCLA, all had player availability issues. And also Coach Self also being out. Certainly is something that the committee talked about throughout the course of the year. It certainly played a factor in seeding and selection in addition to Rutgers.
All right, so that was the selection committee chairman on that. I understand it to a point, but I do feel like Liam Robbins being hurt did not help Vanderbilt. And that was one thing the committee looked at. And leaving them out. How much of a factor, Michelle, do you think injuries should play into seeding and whether a team gets in or out?
It's tough, right? Because I think what it should be is how the team responds when the player's injured. So say they get injured in conference championship week and the team still looks like, okay, yep, they're holding their own. They're able to make some adjustments. They're fine. But if a team has, you know, a complete collapse, I think it definitely has to play a role. But you can't just throw out what the team has done with that player and then, because that player is unavailable, assume that, oh, they won't be able to reach their full potential because X, Y, and Z player is out. I think, you know, one of the best and the most fun thing about March in basketball is it's not always the star player who has, you know, this unbelievable game or run or helps lead their team to a championship. So I think it should play somewhat of a role, but I also don't think it should be a deciding factor. I mean, if you have, say, let's take Alabama, for example, and say Brandon Miller got injured or something like that. Yeah, that would affect the team because he's one of the best players,
or suspended, maybe.
Or suspended. Yeah. He's one of the best players in the country right now, but I don't think anybody would be saying, okay, we're not going to put Alabama a one seed because they don't have them, because we've seen other guys on their team. We've seen them get to where they are. Brandon Miller, a huge part of it, but I do think it really hurt Vanderbilt not having Liam Robbins. But I said this earlier today. I think even if they beat Texas A&M, by the way the committee viewed them, which I think they viewed them and looked at the net scores and made them a big factor in which teams were in, which teams were out, I don't know if it would have mattered if Liam Robbins was on this team and they still beat Texas A&M. I still think that the committee played the net scores into these tournaments more than we expected them to. And the lowest net score team to ever make it into the NCAA tournament was in 2019, and it was St. John's. They had a 74. They were 74th in the net. Vanderbilt, after the Texas A&M game, I think ended up being at 81st. So it was a tall task for them anyways. I think you can look at if Liam Robbins was in and was playing with this team, that they would have, you know, maybe they would have been able to beat Texas A&M, but I really don't think they still would have made it in, Chase. I think that the net, it's unfortunate, but I think that played a huge role.
Yeah,
it hurt them a lot.
I agree, but it's also, you know, I think, too, you know, they asked about, okay, how much is Bill Self, you know, being out and potentially not being able to coach Kansas? They're still a one seed, so I don't think it hurt them all that much.
No, it didn't.
You know, at all. They, you know, I don't think they were going to be the number one overall seed. But so that to me is baloney. But, you know, the other part, too, is, and I said this earlier, of how much are the committee, is this committee watching Vanderbilt? Or is it a like, it's Vanderbilt, nobody cares. You know, and maybe that's my bias coming into play. But there are times that I wonder about stuff like that, that, you know, people may not, you know, be paying attention like they should. And there's never going to be a perfect system when it comes to a selection committee, whether it's the college football playoff or it's the NCAA tournament or what have you. You know, as long as you're basing something on somebody making a decision and not just record, then there's going to be, you know, there's going to be human bias involved in it. And you're going to have some people that, again, I equated this to like your office pool, that I wonder sometimes if there's people on this committee that are like, I'm not going to put in, I'm on the committee, but I'm not going to put in the research maybe that I should on some of these teams. And I get it. You've got to make a field of 68, but you've committed to doing this, so you got to put in the research. You know, Willie Donick, every year that, I mean, I've listened to him on the radio, and obviously since I've known him, he puts his bracket together, his field of 68 every year, and he does the research. Like, people look at him going like, dude, what are you doing? He spends hours doing the research to put together what he believes would be his field of 68. That's what I expect of everybody that's involved in this committee.
Yeah, I agree, Chase. And the unfortunate truth is, I think that they've created this net metric that has been leaned on heavily, whereas the eye test, sometimes, you know, the net doesn't show everything, and you have to just look at who is an NCAA team right now and who is not an NCAA team right now. And I think that there are some teams specifically in the tournament right now in the SEC that Vanderbilt should be in over.
And, you know, it's time to fill out brackets. We're going to have our little bracket pool here at 102.5, 106.3 The Game. But you can do it too, because the teams have been selected for the college basketball tournament. So that means it's time for you to sign up and play the official Game Bracket Challenge. It's brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge or the Game Nashville app now and pick your teams for a chance to win tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium on Saturday, April 15th. Am I eligible? I don't think I am.
Right?
I would like to be. And so check that out at thegamenashville.com. We're going to fill out our brackets too, so you can go up against us, even though we can't win. But should be a lot of fun, because we all enjoy filling out brackets. Coming up next, we will continue this. What are your thoughts on the tournament? We haven't heard from a lot of people today. 615-737-1025. Did your team make it? Do you like where your team is seated right now? Do you think Vandy got snubbed or somebody else? 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063 The Game. Live from the Rusty Nail this Friday for the second day of the opening round of the tournament. Enjoy $3 Tulane draft beers while watching some hoops during a St. Patrick's Day celebration. The Rusty Nail is located in Hermitage and provides a great local atmosphere with a large outdoor patio and volleyball courts. Ooh, that could be fun. Plus, great drinks and great food, especially the wings, and I do love wings. That's 102.5 The Game live at the Rusty Nail, 4054 Andrew Jackson Way in Hermitage this Friday. The doors will open at 10 a.m. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Frazier with you on this Monday, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. You can hit us up on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. I saw an interesting stat, Michelle. Alan Bell of CBS Sports put this out. He actually put this on his Instagram a few days ago, but I just happened to see it. One seeds have won five straight NCAA tournaments. However, the overall number one seed hasn't won since 2013.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think that is crazy to think about.
Yeah, so, because you usually think if you're a one seed, I mean, we just think of the tournament as it matters because of where you're placed in the bracket, but once the tournament tips off, it's anyone's game. It really is. But that is an interesting stat that the number one overall seed hasn't won since 2017, you said?
2013.
Oh, 2013. Okay, 10 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, so that's Alan Bell putting that out there. That's interesting. You know, so when you think about and honestly, like, I think that trend continues. I don't think Alabama's going to win the whole thing. I mean, I think they could go on a run, but I don't think they win the whole thing.
It'll be a tall task, especially since they just won three games in a row here, and then to now turn around and have to win six games in a row, it'll be a tall task.
Yeah, if I'm picking a one seed, and I have not filled my bracket out yet, I haven't gone through and done my research, if I'm picking a one seed to win the whole thing, it's Kansas.
Really?
Just based on experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're a pretty good team. I
think they are.
Look, Alabama's a good team too, but let's see. Alabama's path to get there would be, I mean, they could potentially get to the Final Four. I don't think that you know is a question. But you know, it depends on who they get in the Final Four. You know, if your Wildcats get there, I mean, I wouldn't bet against Cal all that much. So, Michigan State, Izzo.
They have to play Purdue as well.
Purdue. I mean, who knows? So, that's why they play it. That's why it's fun to play through the tournament.
Oh, believe me, I know. And the thing is about Alabama is they can be so good, but if you have if one night they're not hitting threes, that is a they shoot threes and they drive to the basket. They don't do any of this 2-point floaters. That's been Nate Oates' philosophy down there. And when it works, they're the best team in the country. But if it doesn't, and you're traveling and you're games back to back to back, they have to be able to win when they can't shoot well.
Got a trade in the NFL to announce that won't become official until Wednesday, but the Patriots are trading tight end Jonnu Smith to the Atlanta Falcons. Reunites him with Coach Arthur Smith.
Okay.
That's a good move.
Yeah, he wasn't very productive up there with the Patriots.
No, he sucked.
Yeah, I felt like he just, you know, he didn't go anywhere in between his time here and there, right? He went straight to the Patriots.
Yep.
No, back with Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith needs to make some moves this offseason. I think they're the team with the second most cap space, just behind the Bears, as far as, you know, free agency money or money for free agency and things like that. But you know, he's been coaching there a couple years now, and the pressure to win is on more than ever for him in Atlanta.
Unnamed texter says, I'm an Alabama hater. I don't consider myself a Roll Tider whatsoever. Never have been. I don't know if I'm a hater. I mean, I think they're a good team. I obviously have a lot of respect for Nick Saban and what he's done on the football side, but I think Nate Oates is a hell of a coach too. They have not handled the Brandon Miller situation right, in my opinion.
Oh, they've handled it awful, but Nate Oates...
That doesn't make me a hater.
Yeah, Nate Oates is a... I mean, he's won two SEC championships in the last 3 years at Alabama when the SEC is consistently having 7-8 teams go to the tournament, which if you were to look at this conference about 7 years ago, they had three teams. Kentucky won the SEC tournament almost every single year. And no other teams were really relevant as far as the national conversation. And I actually asked Buzz Williams yesterday at Texas A&M, you know, he got hired at Texas A&M, came from Virginia Tech, and the last 2 years he made it to the SEC championship, didn't get into the tournament last year, and just fell in the NIT in the final game. But this year, I mean, his team's going to the tournament. You look at them, you look at Dennis Gates and what he's been able to do with Missouri, Jerry Stackhouse here. You got Tennessee, Rick Barnes there, Bruce Pearl, Auburn, Eric Musselman at Arkansas. I mean, these are all teams that have been talked about in the national conversation. And you look at the SEC, and I'm going to say something right now that might turn people's heads.
Uh-oh.
But the SEC, give it a couple years, will dominate in football and basketball. And we will see I mean, they just hired Chris Beard at Ole Miss. So
is that official?
Yeah, they made it official this morning. So that is a very successful college basketball coach. You saw, listen, Texas is a two seed right now, and he put that team together. Obviously, there was some legal issues going on, and now he's hired at Ole Miss. So
I think he got a raw deal there.
Yeah, but so the SEC will be the most dominant basketball conference in, I'll say, 5 years from now.
I don't know. So I'll say it like this. I don't think that's a hot take. I don't know if I 100% agree with you, because I still think, you know, the ACC and...
I mean, the ACC has not been good.
No, they haven't. They haven't. But, you know, the question is, are they gonna come back around? By the way, speaking of the ACC, can I rant for just a second?
UNC.
What are you doing? Are you that above the NIT that you say, hey, we're going to pass. Thank you, but we're going to reflect on what happened this year, and we're going to look at our future. Give me a break. Are you that arrogant and that full of yourself? I understand it was a disappointing season, that you were number one. Everybody was thinking you were going to do it again. Hubert Davis being the coach. But come on. It didn't go your way, and now you're going to turn down an invitation to go play in a tournament in the postseason, even though it is the NIT. Like, give me a break.
Don't act like you're too good for the NIT when you couldn't get into the tournament. That's all I have to say on that, and I agree with you. I think that is not the mentality you want to have as a coach and as a program, that we're too good for this, when your team probably could use a couple more games to play and maybe get them ready.
It's the arrogance.
Yeah.
That, I mean, because they can try and justify it all they want, and this is what it really is. Everybody's going to look at them you're arrogant, you're UNC, you think you're above the NIT. And I know all the jokes, you know, NIT, not in tournament, whatever. The NCAA still controls it. And if I'm a team like Vanderbilt, I'm going, hey, we're pissed off that we're not in the NCAA tournament, so let's show everybody and go win the NIT. That's the mentality you need to have.
Exactly.
But they're UNC.
There's good teams in the NIT. Michigan's in there, Hunter Dickerson. You got Vanderbilt in there. Clemson, right? Whatever teams, you know, didn't make it
Oklahoma
in.
State.
It's not like there aren't good programs in there and teams that could very well be playing in the tournament. But
let's squeeze in a call real quick. Larry wants to weigh in on the tournament in Vandy. Larry, what's up?
Hey, Larry.
Hey, man. How are you?
We're good.
Good.
Hey, I've never understood the idea of the play-in games. I understand 68 get them down to 4, but the way I understand the tournament, they rank the number one seed, and they put them as the best number one and all the way down. And then the fifth team goes in with the fourth number one. If you've got Mississippi State and Pitt that are good enough to be 11 seeds, why are they in a play-in game?
I understand what you're saying.
Why are they having to play a play-in game and not just rank all 68 teams to take the bottom 8, let them play?
Yeah, I've never understood that either. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Larry.
I think that's a really good question of why they do that. You know, why you have two playing games are for 16s, and then two are for, I think it usually is an 11. I don't understand. Maybe somebody has a better explanation. Willie probably does. I don't understand that, though.
I don't want to say something that I'm completely wrong at, but I think it has something to do with the non-Power Fives, right? So I think the 11 seed might be the lowest seed for a Power Five team.
Right.
Would that make sense?
Maybe.
I think it is. I'm not looking at it right now. And then, you know, the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, those are I actually don't know. I'm not even –
Yeah, I
would have to look into that, but I agree. I mean, it's one of those things where you see a team like Drake and they win the Missouri Valley, they've punched their ticket, and that's what makes March so great, because you have teams like that who can go on a run and compete with some of the best teams in the country. But then on the other hand, you have teams like a Vanderbilt, like a Michigan, who are better but don't make it in. But I think that's what makes the tournament great.
Yeah, for sure. Jonnu Smith going to Atlanta. Patriots are getting a 2023 seventh round pick in return. So that is the report coming out in the NFL. Coming up next, we'll talk to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, get his thoughts on the tournament, Titans free agency, all of that. That is next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. All right, let's make 2023 the year that you beat Vegas. Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head-to-head with the best odds makers in Las Vegas. There's no fancy computer algorithms. There's no guys across the pond setting the line for American sports. It's just the best team of odds makers in the biz right there behind the counter at the Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, Superbook features some of the best odds boosts and promo bets that you will find anywhere. Download that Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com to start your battle against Vegas right now. And they got the futures bets. If you want to go ahead and make your national championship selection, you can do that on the Superbook Sports app. You can pick region winners in the tournament. And obviously the individual games are up as well. It's all right there at the palm of your hand on the Superbook Sports app. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call
1-800-889-9789. Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Chase McCabe. I think we lost Chase McCabe.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. There we are. Chase McCabe. We've got Jonathan Hutton joining us in a second. We have got Jonathan?
I think we are efforting to get him on the Zoom as we speak.
Yes, he is still in process of connecting.
So we'll get him in just a second, but looking forward to talking to him as I'm out of breath as I just ran across my house. But it was a good time, good little workout this morning. We'll get his thoughts on the trade that just went down. And there he is. I think we got Hutt with us now. But the Jonnu Smith being traded from the Patriots to the Falcons for a seventh-round pick. Hutt, you got us? Don't know if we have him yet. We'll
one sec.
Get him on in a second.
Yes, we will hop. Get him on in a second.
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting move. I know there were Titans fans that wanted to see Jonnu Smith come back here. I kind of had moved on. I didn't really want to see that happen. I think if you can obviously build Chigakonkwo, make Chigakonkwo your feature tight end and a part of your passing game, that's what the Titans need to do. And I think that's what they will do moving forward. But I think if you want to bring Austin Hooper back on a 1 or 2 year deal, I'm certainly fine with that. I didn't care for trading for Jonnu Smith. So I'm kind of glad that they didn't pull that off. And he's going to go to the Atlanta Falcons and be reunited with Arthur Smith, which I think is interesting. Hutt, you got us?
Yeah, Chase, glad to be back on with you guys.
Yeah, what did you think of that move? Arthur Smith gets a guy that he used quite a bit when he was here as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, look, it's going to be great for Jonnu Smith. He has combined in New England, I believe, just a bit over 400 yards combined over the last two seasons with the Patriots. With Arthur Smith, he had a combined 800 yards and around 80 catches or so in the two seasons from 2019 and 2020 when he really flourished. And he's been with Arthur his entire career except for New England, because Arthur was also the tight ends coach whenever the Titans drafted Jonnu Smith. So it's going to be great there. The Patriots are just trying to dump the contract because it just hasn't worked. And they're also trying to maneuver some things in free agency to help out Mac Jones, and they're moving to a Bill O'Brien offense. It's great for Jonnu to reunite with Arthur Smith. That's the best possible scenario for him.
Yeah, I think so too. And I didn't want to see him come to the back to the Titans. I think that time had come and gone. But overall, I like that move. So the legal tampering period, as I like to call it, is starts today. I don't think the Titans are going to be super active in this first wave of free agency. I think they're being careful with how much money they're going to spend. I think Jeffrey Simmons is going to get the money this year, as he should. But guys like Nate Davis, David Long Jr., what do you think happens with those two?
I think Nate Davis is going to get paid elsewhere. David Long Jr. is interesting because, you know, that he's, as far as value is concerned, I think teams will see him as a valuable piece, as a role player. And he made big plays for this Titans team early in the season whenever they started out, you know, on that seven wins the first half of the season. Long's the one who made the interception at Washington, for instance, off of Carson Wentz late in the game. There's going to be plenty of teams that are looking for him. The question is, where do the Titans value him and his trajectory versus where he is now? How high is his ceiling in this Titans defense? I think they like him. Do they love him enough to match an offer that he's going to get elsewhere? I think we have some time, though, to determine that. I think we could see Davis sign relatively soon based on the money that he's projected to get. And the only aggressive move I could see the Titans making is going to be on the offensive line, because it's going to be a combo of veteran and rookie. And what you certainly can't have is, you know, multiple starters starting for the first time in year number one of the NFL. They need to bolster that veteran leadership up front. And that could come at the guard spot. It could also come at tackle. But I'm with you, Chase. They've got a middle of the pack right now in terms of teams and cap maneuverability. I believe somewhere around $17 million, which is about average right now for teams that are trying to get below the salary cap by March 15th. They can make other moves too. They can save a lot of cap space by dealing Ryan Tannehill. And we all await the Aaron Rodgers decision, because right now the Jets don't know one way or the other if Rodgers is going to choose them or retirement.
We've got Jonathan Hutton on with us of Outkick 360. Jonathan, the Panthers made the move for the number one overall pick this weekend. What did you think about that move and the load of picks that the Bears got, and, of course, DJ Moore?
Well, I think it's great for Chicago. They had around $100 million in cap space, and then they picked up DJ Moore's contract. He's 26 years old. He would be a top five, maybe top three or four receiver in Bears history based on the yardage he's had in Carolina. And he's only 26 whenever the season kicks off. That's crazy to think about. And it's another piece for Justin Fields. So they end up with like $75 million or so left under the cap. They've got plenty of reasons to go invest in their young QB. And that's what Carolina's looking for as well, a young quarterback. I think it's Bryce Young. I think David Tepper is allowing the move to happen to go get the franchise guy. I think the pick can be CJ Stroud. I think Frank Reich would end up liking a quarterback like that. I don't think it's Levis or Richardson, like some are going to say. And I did find it intriguing that as soon as the trade was made, within an hour or so, tweets are coming out from across the league and with all the quote unquote insiders saying the Bears are still open for negotiating out of the first overall selection. I don't know why you trade to move up, or excuse me, the Panthers. I don't know why you trade to move up if you're Carolina, if you're automatically thinking about dealing it again. that was something. I think they use the pick, and I think they take Stroud or Bryce Young.
We got Jonathan Hutton on with us of Outkick 360. Jonathan, switching over to a little basketball, we had the SEC tournament here in Nashville this weekend, and then obviously the brackets were announced yesterday. What do you think about Vanderbilt not getting in and Tennessee taking on Louisiana in the first round and then could potentially have a second round matchup with Duke?
Yes. Let's start with Tennessee first. Very inconsistent, very up and down. Can be half to half. It can be at the free throw line. It can be anything. But one thing that is going to show up is their defense.
Yeah.
So I think they're a team that can make the Sweet 16 as a ceiling, is how I see this, Michelle.
Okay.
They're also a team that could bow out on the opening weekend very easily. I have no idea what to expect from the Vols whenever they tip off against Louisiana. And then Duke in the second round, hypothetically saying that Duke advances here, and I think they will. I think that's where we could see the Vols season come to an end in the round of 32. As for Vandy, look, it's not hard to convince me in the total body of work that they're not a tournament team. In the coverage yesterday that I'm watching on CBS, Vanderbilt was not mentioned one single time. Not one single time, which tells me the committee didn't even have them on their radar. They're a three seed in the NIT, and that's without North Carolina being in the NIT. And if you're going to make the argument and the entire body of work, fine, that's cool. I also don't buy into then seeding down certain teams for not having a player that was with them for the majority of the season, which the committee does, and which some were trying to make the argument Tennessee would be seeded down based on not having Ziegler. Again, I don't buy that because I think the committee can make up any argument it wants to based on the specific situation team by team. But even if Vanderbilt deserves to be in, the committee was saying, hey, there are three or four teams ahead of them based on what we saw and how things finished. They finished the season looking like a tournament team. But year to year, I still can't tell you what the committee truly values because they can change their argument, not just year to year, but team by team. And that's what happened here with the Commodores.
Jonathan Hutton is here with us, and yeah, I hear what you're saying on that, Hutt. I think sometimes, and I'm trying to put my bias aside, that you have a lot of these committee members. You mentioned CBS didn't even bring up Vanderbilt. How much are they watching? How much are they even paying attention? Because it's Vanderbilt. You know, how much does that factor in sometimes?
Yeah, and I mean it's certainly. Look, if the first article that normally comes out off of Selection Sunday after the bracket posts are the snubs, and guys like Seth Davis and everyone sitting there, they know who's on the bubble, and to not bring up Vandy in that spot told me a lot because I'm sure they get those brackets well in advance. I think the committee pretty much has these things seeded before the conference tournaments really even start, especially the Power Fives. I don't think the conference tournaments matter all that much, quite frankly. It didn't matter to A&M last year, and I don't think it mattered one bit for Vanderbilt's case this year. I think it's just the conferences want us to think that it matters. The committee over the last 2 years, specifically in the SEC, has told us it doesn't. Mississippi State is in. Vanderbilt is not. Vanderbilt right now is a better team than Mississippi State, but it doesn't matter. And I would welcome any argument to tell me that the SEC and the tournament here in Nashville or last year factored into what the committee did seed-wise because Tennessee won the SEC. It did not factor into their seeding in a bump up last year, and it doesn't help Vanderbilt get in this year just like it hurt A&M a year ago. It shouldn't have hurt A&M a year ago, but A&M is the team that knows how Vandy feels from last year, and A&M mopped them in the game this weekend.
And now they're somehow a seven seed, which I don't also understand.
Well, here's why. Round two, they get Texas. That's why the committee does this. They want Texas and Texas A&M on Saturday or Sunday, whenever they play, which is also BS.
Because it kind of screws Texas.
Well, before Texas comes to the SEC, we have not seen that rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Aggies fans, Billy Lucci at Texags. There's no way A&M was going to continue that rivalry with A&M being in the SEC, Texas in the Big 12, and A&M in the first matchup against Texas, they want to host that football game. It also factors in for the committee when it comes tournament time too, right here. And they have the opportunity to do it. They do this every year. I mean, there's no, they did it, once or twice with Patino, where they've done it with at Louisville or wherever, try to match up against Kentucky. Yeah, they do this, and that's how you make that happen. If Texas is going to be where they are, you have to make A&M, who is going to be a 5 or a 6 based on projections, you have to make them a 7. And that's what the committee did. They made the matchups they want for television.
Indeed they did. Well, it'll be interesting to see for sure. Hutt, appreciate it as always. Jonathan Hutton on with us every Monday at 10:30, and of course presented by Blendbar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blendbar in the heart of downtown Nashville today. Blendbar with Davidoff Cigars is luxury redefined. And we'll be listening starting at 2 o'clock on 94.9 The Fan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You too.
Jonathan Hutton joins us every Monday at 10:30. You can also hear him Wednesdays at noon with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace on that show as well. Coming up next, we'll put a bow on things. A lot happening in the sports world right now. We'll revisit it all. That is all next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds fans, don't miss Wednesday night Smashville Live at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus you can get autographs and pictures. Preds players guest this Wednesday night will be Luke Evangelista and Kiefer Sherwood. Smashville Live is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dulce Vida Tequila, pure and simple. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Frazier here with you on this Monday. As a lot of things to get into, one quick Predators note, and then I know Michelle has a little bit of a rant.
I do.
The Predators have signed Mark Jankowski to a one-year deal worth $775,000, so he will be back next year. We have seen David Poile and Barry Trotz get a few of these guys that have been role players re-signed, and so bringing them back into the fold. All right, Michelle, what is your rant?
Okay, quick rant. I tweeted yesterday. Jerry Stackhouse went on SportsCenter yesterday talking about his team before the brackets obviously came out, and I said, if you take the numbers out of it, if 8 teams in the SEC make the tournament, how is Vanderbilt not one? They beat Florida with Colin Castleton, Tennessee when they were 5th in the country, Kentucky ranked and in Rupp Arena and at the SEC tournament, Arkansas, Auburn, and Mississippi State. And then I compared it to Mississippi State, and I said Mississippi State hasn't beat Tennessee, Kentucky, or Alabama all season long, consistently 3 of the top teams in the SEC. And somebody quoted the tweet and saying, number 80 in KenPom and number 81 in net. I swear to God, Chase, people need to stop thinking that these numbers are the only thing that matters. And the problem here is it's not so much that Vandy didn't get in. The problem is that they weren't even talked about to be the first 4 out, or they weren't even talked about a team who just barely made it, and they were a 2 seed in the NIT. That's the problem. The problem is the net system, it measures a bunch of different things. Offense and defensive efficiency, winning margin, all these different things. And Vanderbilt, the way that they measure it, they just don't score well in it. But you can't say that that number equals not a good basketball team. And that's sure. That's the problem that I have right now is everybody on Twitter saying, well, they're 80 in net and all this stuff. Okay. I don't really care, actually, because what I see is them beating teams that are ranked teams, a Tennessee when they were 5th in the country. I see them beating a surging Kentucky, ranked top 20 in the country at Rupp Arena. I see them beating, right, a Kentucky in the SEC tournament. I see them beating teams that have an opportunity to go deep into the tournament. And the problem is that they weren't even considered from what we saw from the committee last night, Chase.
So I would love, on those lines, because I agree with you, I would love to know, because back in, let's say 1975, I'll just pull a random year out. The final that year was UCLA, Kentucky. UCLA wins as John Wooden's 10th championship at UCLA. And I believe it was 32 teams. Maybe it was 64, I don't know. But I would love to know how, you know, it back then, if, because analytics aren't what, or weren't then what they are now.
Yeah.
And people didn't care about them. But if you applied the net and today's analytics, and I don't even know if this is possible, and you go back and do it then, how much of a difference it would make. It was more resume. It was more record and eye test, and it was just kind of by feel then and how you seeded the tournament. I would love to apply some of the things we do now to some of the tournaments from the past. And I know that's hard to do, but to see how they come out, because I think they're important, and I'm not saying they don't need to go away, but I just think sometimes it's a cop out because it's like you haven't paid attention to a team. And so you go and you look at numbers. It's just like looking at a box score. You can always tell when somebody just looks at the box score. And one of my favorite lines from Teron Davenport, and I think he gets this from Booger McFarland, but Teron uses it a lot. Stats are like bikinis. they don't show everything.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Just because you see a number, or it does not tell the whole story of the game, of the player. You can have such an effective player on defense. I look at Quentin Melora Brown on Vanderbilt. Doesn't show up on the stat sheet a lot. Very important to that team.
Yeah, but stats don't show the whole story. Numbers don't show the whole story. You need to watch the games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they do. And that is just what drives me nuts.
So all the Vanderbilt players, let's take an extra year of eligibility and run it back, guys.
I hope so. Fun show today. A lot of excitement with the NCAA tournament. We'll continue to talk about that as the week goes along. Michelle, great job by you covering the SEC.
So much fun.
Was this your first like big tournament to go cover, right?
Yeah.
Or had you been to the SEC before?
I had been as a fan. I worked the American Conference Women's right before COVID, but yes, this was my first big-time college basketball tournament. I think I pulled about 21 and a half hours straight on Friday. It was the most incredible thing ever.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job. So,
thanks.
I know you had fun with that. Great job on Fox 17 with Jill as well. Mm-hmm. But that'll do it for us. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next. Willie's on a plane, and I know he can't stand it that he's not going to be able to talk the day after Selection Sunday, but he'll be here tomorrow for sure. That'll do it for us. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.